fourth and eight. You're either looking at a 61-yard field goal attempt or a fake. And they convert on the outside. Kevin Byard. Well, we know he can catch it because he's a threat to intercept any pass that comes near him. He's on the receiving end for 11 yards and a first down for the Titans. Tannehill hooks a pass. Touchdown! He hummed it in there to Corey Davis. Tennessee looking for the lead. Tannehill darts it back in the end zone. Touchdown! Tajay Sharp. The Titans go in front. Henry with a head of steam. Henry takes it all the way. Touchdown! Titans! Chargers down by three. Rivers on again. Gordon. Did he get in?
This official says no.
Oh, the clock is rolling. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. Titans have the football. Is that a fumble for Gordon? And here's Vinovich.
After reviewing the play, the runner lost the ball prior to the touchdown. It was fully covered by the defense. It's a touchdown.
A stunning ending. In Tennessee, the Titans somehow hold on to beat the Chargers 23-20. The chain of events that took place at the end of regulation, you could not have possibly predicted. Tennessee gets the win.
And we welcome you into a Monday edition of Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game, Nick Brayton, D-Maze Marquise. Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, the call yesterday, as you heard there on CBS, as the Tennessee Titans defeat the Chargers in a battle of 2-4 teams, 23-20. And boys, do we have so much to talk about today. Not just with the Titans, the Vols, Vandy, so many good things from the weekend.
But your Alabama Crimson Tide, hello.
Injuries, yep. We got a lot. Today's an action-packed 4 hours. I won't be...
What about the Preds-Panthers game?
Yeah, we'll get to them, too, because I've got some Saturday stats.
Ooh, and they don't involve college football.
That don't involve college football.
Interesting.
Which is very scary on my part. I will reevaluate my life at 10 o'clock this morning.
Maybe, here's my thoughts on the Preds. Stop going down 2-0.
Stop losing on Saturday.
Stop going down 2 goals in every game.
Yeah.
That's my take.
I won't be a prisoner of the moment and say that Ryan Tannehill saved the season, but I do think Ryan Tannehill yesterday extended the season, at least for 1 week, with a really tremendous performance. And I personally would just like to thank the Tennessee Titans and say welcome back and rejoining the National Football League as an offensive team.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
I mean,
back.
Hey, 2019.
They looked, and if you, and don't take, and I don't want to take anything for, not too much from the preseason or not even too much from the week that they, when they decided to make the change in the middle of the last quarter of the game last week. But when he's in a game, the offense seems to run crisp. He seems to get to his guys, boom, 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 and he's good. And guys, it seems like when he's out there, guys know they're going to get the ball. It just, the offense looks different. It looked different yesterday. Now, I don't know how it's going to look next week. But from what I've seen, each time he's been in a game, going back to the preseason, I know that was against second, and when he was playing, it's probably against second teamers. But when he's in a game, the offense looks different. It runs different. He gets to his assignments quicker. He gets to the routes quicker. He throws. He doesn't care. He's not scared with trying to put the ball in there. He believes in his arm, and he doesn't. He's not scared with trying to get the ball in the tight places. The ball he threw to Corey Davis across the middle, I don't think Marcus would have threw that ball. He threw that ball. He hit it. Boom. Threw it to him because he was not open. Corey Davis was not open. He stuck it right on his chest. I don't know if that's a pass Marcus would have threw, or Marcus would have hesitated and probably waited to the second hole for him, and then he would have been covered by then. I think the offense flows much better when Tannehill is in the game. Not to say that he's the savior of this team, and he's the end-all, be-all. And he might have a stretch where, you know, for four or five games he plays well, and then, you know, he doesn't play well. But I think Arthur Smith is not afraid to call plays when Ryan's in the game. He's not afraid to do some things that he probably wouldn't have done had Marcus was in the game. It just looks different. I don't know what else to tell you. That offense, yeah. they're going against the number the fifth ranked.
We'll get into a big argument about that.
No.
The
fifth
Chargers ranked, defense sucks.
The fifth ranked passing offense. I mean defense. Fifth ranked passing defense.
Yards per game.
He went against them. There was tight coverage. Those guys still wasn't really open. The Titans receivers, they still really wasn't open a lot. But he stuck the ball in there.
So I think, first of all, I think the win saved the season, to your point, Nick, right, about expanding the season or extending the season. The fact that they figured out a way to win, even as – I still think the ending of the game is the headline. Obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Ryan Tannehill's performance, rightly so. But the end of that game, I'm not sure I've ever seen a football game end that way. In 30 years of watching NFL football, I'm not sure I've ever seen a game end the way that one ended. And so we'll get to it. And I think
there
was
part of one.
And there was you have?
Yeah.
Where it was
Baltimore. Baltimore here when we couldn't get the ball in the end zone.
Yeah, and maybe you just forget about those kind of weird mm-hmm. games and you know they happen, but I just have never seen basically three touchdowns called back essentially in the final minute. I mean, it's just crazy. The refs didn't look like they knew what they were doing, but they finally figured it out. And so we'll spend a lot of time on that. But as far as Tannehill and Marcus goes, I think it's clearly they're in different headspaces right now. Like there's, to me, the difference is, and we know the difference from a skill set standpoint isn't all that different. We know that Tannehill stays on schedule and gets rid of the football a little bit more than Marcus does, but they just look like two totally different quarterbacks from a mental standpoint. One looks completely shattered emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, and doesn't, you know, the 29 sacks or whatever. The offensive line yesterday played the best game of the season, probably. Because blocking the Falcons is not a big deal. Like, the Falcons haven't had a sack in, like, 6 years. So, it's not, you know, blocking the Falcons is not a great, you should not be writing home to your mom talking about how great you played against the Falcons a couple of weeks ago as an offensive line. Now, I think the offensive line yesterday, I could not believe the amount of time they gave Ryan Tannehill. So, that's part of this equation. They played very well in pass pro. They did not run the football as well, maybe until the fourth quarter when they needed it, and then it came to life. And then, of course, we'll get to how the Titans basically tried to give the game away in only a way that the Titans can possibly do. Again, I've never seen the jaws of victory and the jaws of defeat go to battle at the mm-hmm. end of the game. Like, the jaws of defeat are trying to snatch the game away from the Titans, and then somehow you end up winning the game. Again, the ending is completely bizarre. Tannehill's very good. There's no question about it. He is in a very – he feels like a motivated to prove himself backup quarterback who's getting his chance. And the other guy feels like a starter who's been beaten to death for a year and a half and is mentally broken. That's what I see with those two players, and he delivered. I will completely push back on the Chargers. The Chargers being a good defensive football team. This is a 2-5 football team that when you look at all the analytics of yards as far as pass defense, they are one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. They give up the fifth most yards per attempt of anybody. They give up one of the highest quarterback ratings to opposing quarterbacks. They do not sack the quarterback at all. They still got pressure on Tannehill yesterday because the offensive line still isn't all that great. So I do it again. Go out and do it again. Yesterday was great. Show us week in and week out, because what's the argument with Marcus? Well, we see it once every now and then. He plays against a bad team and he lights them up, and then there's no consistency. That's the concern with Marcus Mariota. We saw him do this, what Ryan Tannehill did yesterday, a couple of weeks ago. Literally 3 games ago, he lit up a bad defense and they got a win. I need to see it now from Tannehill against good defenses, against high-level teams, consistently week in and week out. But for right now, he saved the season. They saved the season. The offense saved the season. Although maybe Jeffrey Simmons saved the season, because I think that's also a huge story here, right? Is Jeffrey Simmons dominated on the goal line stand. He dominated. He made the tackle on the second play, and he blew up the center on the final play that allowed Wesley Woodyard to create the fumble. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, think about the story that he is. He tore his ACL in February, He's the first round draft pick playing in his first NFL game, and he's going to be in on a goal line stand with half a minute left to go to win the game, and he is one of the difference makers. What a great story. Jeffrey Simmons, welcome to the NFL, man.
The debuts yesterday of Simmons, Tannehill, guys that have not played this year, having monster performances.
Played monster.
Jonnu Smith. And
yeah, oh, by the way, a very happy Delanie Walker on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Hey, don't be surprised, man. I'm telling you, I went through the same thing. And right around this time, right around Halloween, don't be surprised if Delanie Walker gets traded. I'm telling you. Don't be surprised, because his body language on the sideline told me that if he was hurt, if Delanie's hurt, in order for him not to play means he can't walk. You know, if he can't walk, then he can't play.
It's a serious injury.
Yeah, it's a serious injury. And they didn't make it seem like it was a serious injury with him. He was activated. He was dressed on the sideline. Even though he still was in the game, you saw he still was in the game, didn't fuss, didn't do it. He was on the sideline watching the game, but you could just see it on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Disgust. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those situations where I don't think the coaching staff told him what his role was going to be.
Ooh, that would be controversial.
I don't think they did. And I've seen this book play out before. And don't be surprised if they shred. Now that Conklin is hurt too, he left. They need some more offensive line depth.
Nate Davis
might be gone.
Yesterday.
Don't be surprised.
And I thought that was what made Tannehill's performance even better. 23 of 29, 79%, 312, two touchdowns, a pick, which really can't blame him. He got his elbow smashed because Jonnu Smith got beat off the edge by that backup defensive end. Quarterback rating of 120.1. But you watch him yesterday, and to your point, Nate Davis goes down, Jack Conklin goes down, Delanie Walker goes down. I just thought from the Tannehill perspective, I mean, he mentally saw things that I don't think Marcus would have had the vision to see. He let it rip where I didn't think Marcus would let it rip. And there was a couple of times, and I don't think I'm being prisoner of the moment when I say this, when he threw a couple of ropes, and this is the one thing I think Dan Fouts was actually on point with. Mm-hmm. He goes, whoa, was that Patrick Mahomes out there firing fastballs?
there was
some zip on Tannehill's ball yesterday.
There's one where he's rolling left. I think the Mahomes reference was he's running left, and he came back across his body and hit Corey Davis on about a 12-yard crossing route.
It's pretty sweet.
I do think that, yeah, I agree. And listen, he's got a stronger arm than Marcus. We've all agreed on that. There's no question about that. Again, it's all about consistency. We've seen, you know, you've got to do this week in and week out for this team to have a chance to get back in the playoff hunt. You've got to be that good week in and week out. You got to be that good against bad defenses. You got to continue to be that good. And, you know, was it Anthony Firkser that caught the long, like Delanie Walker standing on the sideline because he's not being played? Meanwhile, Anthony Firkser's accidentally catching a 30-yard pass because Tannehill was clearly not throwing it to him. He was clearly throwing it to somebody else.
Yeah, he overthrew him.
And he overthrew him. And it's one of those days where you're having a great day.
It's your day.
And you go and you overthrow the receiver you're throwing to, and then the backup third-string tight end catches one and turns it upfield and goes for 30 yards, and Delanie's on the sideline. And you're going, wait, none of this feels right. But you know what? It's your day when that kind of stuff happens. And so let's see it against some really, really high-level NFL defenses, where they have a full complement of players. You know, three starting defensive linemen were out for the Chargers, and so let's see it again. But man, you got to be excited about the energy that was given yesterday, no question.
All right, your phone calls, Titans fans, 615-737-1025, the number, 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to yesterday's game. What was your biggest takeaway? Tannehill, Simmons, the offensive line protection, the ending, the controversy, all of that, 615-737-1025, the number, and obviously the goal line stand, which was really good as well. It is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Your calls when we come back, 737-1025. We're back after this on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Tennessee Titans offense, you have rejoined the National Football League. Hey, 23 points. I don't know. It feels like 43 today.
Didn't I say whoever wins going to score? I think I said 24 points. Whoever wins going to score 24 points. I think I said that.
Was that the Chainsmokers?
If the Chainsmokers ever do that song again, I might find out where the Chainsmokers are performing.
They ruined my
and
night.
Show up and have some words.
They ruined my night. It took me longer to It took me longer to get home last night than it did to figure out what the hell happened at the end of the game yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you, Chainsmokers, for that.
Isn't it funny, though, like in football, like we always talk about how simplistic it is. It starts up front, and it's all about the trenches. Mm. Yesterday, the Titans' offensive line looked exponentially better than it has all season long. And then on the flip side, Jeffrey Simmons was a complete total monster. And I think most astute football fans said, when they drafted Jeffrey Simmons, that's a really good pick because when he gets healthy, he's going to be a stud. I mean, I think you've even said it. He's like a top five talent.
Yeah, I think he was one of the top three or four players in the draft when they got him. We sort of guessed all summer when we thought he'd be available, right? Like, we were all just guessing. I thought maybe December. You know, Derek, you said maybe not at all this year.
Yeah, I thought they were going to try to hold him out to make sure he's fully healthy.
Right, and we're all sort of just, those are all hypotheses, right? Hypotheses, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. We're all just sort of guessing at what we thought he was going to be. Nobody guessed week 7, first game available. You're in the game on a goal line stand to win the game. Like, nobody saw that coming. Nobody thought that this is how quickly he'd be ready and prepared. And there's a play early in the game where he's getting doubled. And it ended up Melvin Gordon gets tackled for no gain because there's three linebackers that are free to flow and get to the football, and I tweeted it out. I was like, this guy's playing in like his third snap in his NFL career, and they're doubling him already. Like that shows you the respect level that he has already as a player. And if you watch the last two plays of the game, I mean, he makes the tackle essentially. He blows up the center and makes the tackle on the second to last play, and on the last play, he completely destroys the center with one arm, and then that allows Wesley Woodyard and the rest of the guys to fill the hole and take him out. He played a huge role in that goal line stand, and that's what he was drafted for.
Yeah, he's a big fella. You could just tell he can be even more from a physique standpoint. You could just see that he's not fully where they want him to be physically, because he's just big now. And once they get him where they want him, it's going to be next year where you're going to see the transformation. His body's going to look much different than what it does now. Because right now he's just a big fella just sitting in there, and he's quick. He can move the pile. He's fresh.
Powerful.
He's going to be a load for teams to try to stop.
We had Baldy on in the spring when we were doing draft profiles, and we asked him about Jeffrey Simmons, and he said country strong. Now, yeah. I don't want Titans fans to take this the wrong way. Don't twist my words. I'm not saying that he will be or he's even going to ever come close to Aaron Donald. But Jeffrey Simmons, I think, is more physically imposing and more physically gifted than Aaron Donald.
I don't think that's that far of a stretch, man. Aaron Donald, he's
he's bigger than Aaron Donald.
Yeah,
he's
significantly.
Bigger.
Let me ask you this, Derek. You always talk about DeAndre Hopkins being the best receiver in the NFL. Doesn't mean he's the fastest. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he's the most explosive after he catches the football or whatever, right? But he's the best receiver because he just kind of knows how to play the position, mm-hmm. knows how to play his body, use his body. He's a little undersized. He's not Julio Jones. He's not a 6'4", 230 guy, right? That's Aaron Donald. You know, the 6'1", 290 pound. Like, he's a little undersized, but he's just so good at his position. He knows what to do. Jeffrey Simmons is cut from a very different cloth. It is a 6'4", 290, 300 pound, country strong, three down tackle. Like, he's just a different cat. I don't know if he's as explosive as Aaron Donald. Certainly not as accomplished as Aaron Donald. He's got a long way to go. But I don't think it's that crazy to say he's got as much physical ability, right? Like, he's got to use it now. Has to mm-hmm. learn how to use it.
Sure.
But I don't think it's that crazy to say he's got as much physical ability, if not more, than Aaron Donald.
Nah, he's nowhere near Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald's just a physical freak. At about 290, 300, and he moves like a linebacker, and he's quick as a cat. There's nobody in the NFL.
His hands are incredible.
Yeah, there's nobody in the NFL. He's more so in the line of those bigger defensive tackles.
Elodie Nada is.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where.
But what's the old adage, though, in football? Low man wins.
Yeah.
And he always has the leverage against bigger offensive linemen.
Exactly. He has a lower, he has a big lower body, and he just pushes people. And that's what his job is going to be, to push the pocket, to push that center or that guard who's ever on him. They're going to do a lot of double teaming against him, but he's going to be able to push the pocket. And whoever plays next to him will end up getting two or three more sacks on a season because of Jeffrey Simmons. He's more so on the line of those bigger guys where he's going to get a little bit bigger. He's going to get a little bit stronger, and he's just going to be able to push piles.
Fletcher Cox?
Yeah, he's not going to get it. Yeah,
that's
he's not
going to
get a lot of
sacks.
That's a good.
He's not going to get a lot of sacks, but what he's going to do, tackle for losses.
And double
everybody
team.
Else is going to get the sacks because of what Jeffrey Simmons is able to do. Now, I mean, Aaron Donald was just – I hadn't seen a player like Aaron Donald, I mean, since probably Warren Sapp.
Warren Sapp,
I mean, Aaron Donald's just a physical freak. He's on another level, but then – Jeffrey Simmons could be one of those guys if he stay healthy, continues to hone in on his craft. He could be the next that next wave of young defensive linemen that just, you know, that you got to double team. That's just going to dominate. He's going to blow everything up if you don't double team him.
Titans fans, let's get your phone call 615-737-1025. Adam's going to start us off right out of the gate here on a Monday. Adam, you go ahead.
I don't want to say I told you so or anything, but no, I'm just kidding, man. I'm hoping
you can
that,
say it. Say it.
Today's the day to gloat, man.
I'm hoping I can see it a few weeks in a row just like you at eight. So I took my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, yesterday. It was her very first Titans game. And
oh, that's cool.
Now I'm screwed, man, because she's going to think every game is going to be that cool. I don't think we could ever match. I mean, I remember 2001 against the Ravens. We were on the wrong end of that game right there, if you remember that. Bruce Matthews gets up there and sets the ball, and the clock runs out. And yeah, but that's the only other time 18 years later. So I think I'm in trouble there, man. But that was an excellent game.
Adam, how full was the building? You know, second quarter.
Horrible. That stadium was horrible.
It looked pretty empty on TV.
That stadium was horrible. It was even because before the game, I was over in that area, and I told y'all I judged the crowd by how long it takes me to get. You know, through the crowd across the bridge over there. And I was across the bridge like that. I say, ain't nobody at this game.
No Chargers fans either?
There were Chargers fans, but you know. Really? Yeah, but they're not a lot because they're not going to come all the way from L.A. And the Chargers are 2-4. Come on.
I did see one Charger fan at about 11:30 at night sitting on the walking bridge by himself.
Did you go check on him?
He was breathing. He was fine.
Okay.
He was sitting upright. His eyes were open. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure if he knew where he was.
You sure it wasn't Melvin Gordon?
I don't think he had any clue where he was.
Did he have a Sean Merriman jersey on?
Yeah.
No, he had on a...
That's lights out.
I think he had 17, so I think it was Rivers, right? Rivers is 17, right?
Yeah. Was it a black guy with dreads posing as Phillip Rivers? Because
no.
It could have been Gordon sitting on the bridge.
trying to get that new contract.
Speaking of Rivers.
No, fumbling the ball.
No, this was a frumpy white dude.
Speaking of frumpy white dudes, Joe Dubin from Channel 4 with a tweet of the day yesterday says, I'm expecting the game to be sold out because all of Phillip Rivers' children will actually be in attendance.
Oh, you shouldn't have went there.
I mean, Phillip Rivers has more kids than Sean Kemp.
He has like eight.
I think he's got nine.
Is it nine
now? Nine.
Good Lord. Hey, you got the money.
Look, you don't believe in contraception, you don't believe in contraception. It's okay, man.
You got the money.
To each their own.
They are going to have a...
To each their own.
When they get older, they're going to have a great Thanksgiving
and
Christmas.
When they get really old, they're not going to have to worry about like hospital care. They just have a whole orderly staff
exactly.
Like, working for them.
Phillip Rivers here for Cool Springs MD. When I'm not going 9-7 in the AFC West, I'm doing the deed.
I'm making babies.
Justin, next on Morning
I
Drive.
Throw touchdowns and I make babies.
Go ahead, Justin.
Good morning, guys. Y'all doing all right?
Good.
Yes.
I want to talk two things. I'm wrong about Tannehill. He actually moved the offense better than I thought he would. So, yes, I was wrong. I meant that. And on that 4th-and-1, right before the 2-minute warning, why couldn't Mike Vrabel at least challenge it?
Yeah, and that's what we were trying to – Justin, that's what we were trying to figure out. Because it wasn't under 2 minutes. Because under 2 minutes, it has to come from upstairs. The only logic I can come up with is that whoever's looking at it upstairs from the Titans staff, they said, you know what, it's not clear whether he got the ball or over or not. His body may have been, you know, his body may have gotten the first down, but his ball, but ball was behind him.
It's like the Melvin Gordon
exactly.
first goal line play where you're like, he was ruled down, so are they going to overturn it?
Exactly.
Probably not.
I don't think they would have overturned that.
Still, I just think, because I'm with you, that's the only conceivable. There's like 30-something seconds left in your challenge portion of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Like like once you get to 2 minutes, you don't have to worry about how many challenges you have anymore because it's covered. I don't know why you don't at least try. You have all three timeouts left and the lead. It's inconceivable to not challenge. And once again, Mike Vrabel looks at a critical endgame situation in the fourth quarter and has a tough decision in the moment. I get it. Bullets are flying. It's a tough call, and it's live ammunition and everything. But he looks at these two decisions, and it's like the fourth game in a row where he's just gone the totally wrong direction with it, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, he made a couple of bad mistakes at the beginning of last year, but then he corrected them, and it doesn't seem like he's figured it out. And that's a... They should not have been in the situation. There was no excuse for them to have a goal line stand. And this is what we haven't talked about yet. We need to get to when we come back. There's no excuse for that goal line stand to have had to have been the thing to win the game. They should have won the game like 6 or 7 plays, you know, 3 drives earlier. There was no excuse for them to be in that situation. And Vrabel was part of that problem.
615-737-1025. We will continue with your Titans calls. 615-737-1025. The Titans 23, the Chargers 20. Now all of a sudden, the Titans 3-4 and alive, breathing, resuscitated. Back after this. Welcome back into Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game. You overcooking my grits, Coach.
I swear, man. Can I say this, please? I love the people of the Titans facility because they, I mean, anytime I play for an organization, they, you know, whenever I need, they help me to no end. I love them. But that was so corny. That tweet was the corniest.
The one I sent you guys.
That was the corniest tweet I have ever seen. That was so corny.
So like, explain. Okay, what it was.
It's low hanging fruit.
It's low hanging fruit, and you can.
Which are all my jokes.
Okay. Actually, why don't you?
Yeah, because you can quote the whole movie.
Here
yes.
we go, Nick. I want you.
You
to
set
do
the tweet up. I'll give you the quote.
So yes. I want Nick to do a dramatic interpretation
exactly.
of the tweet. So the tweet that the Titans sent out yesterday after
the goal line
stand and the win. A couple minutes go by, and I'm assuming somebody gets a really smart, clever idea in the Titans facility, and they send out a tweet. Nick will now perform a dramatic interpretation.
But give us the scene, because I'm drawing tweet. A blank as to what here. The specific the tweet was.
It's the goal line stand.
Hang on. I'll pull it up. Here's the okay. Let's get you the script here. You need a script. There's the tweet.
There's a script.
Dramatic interpretation.
Oh, it was Coach Yost.
Strong side.
Yes, it was Coach Yost. I don't want them to gain another yard. If they cross that line of scrimmage, I'm going to take each and every last one of you out. You make sure they remember forever the night they played the Titans.
It was the reason I sent that tweet to you guys is because I don't even hear. When I read that tweet, I don't even hear the coaches in the movie speaking. I just hear Nick's voice.
But do you think the people... And again, we love y'all. It was on time. It was on point. But it was
probably
corny.
The same person that
cheesy.
Tweeted out the quarterback
exactly.
battle earlier.
But
in the week.
Do you
cheesy.
Think they were in a frenzy? Like, oh, hurry up, get together. No, we got to make sure we get it right. And then they put it together. And
well,
they
you
it
definitely
out.
Have to fact check the,
yeah,
the
exactly.
quote. So there's you could see somebody like in the Titans Titans social media department like googling remember the Titans quotes, and he's like, let me make sure I get the quote right here. And it was it was appropriate.
No, I mean, it was right on. Yeah, it was right on spot. I mean, good job. By them, but
now,
it was corny.
Now they should have lost the game, but
yeah, that's a different story.
But you didn't. You made a couple plays. So.
But wouldn't it have been the most Titan thing of all time on a day where the offense came to life and showed signs and was able to go up and down the field and look highly effective that the defense would come unglued in the final quarter and change? I mean, the Jayon Brown missing thing is a big thing with the Eckler play down the sideline against Woodyard. Like, I'm thinking, there's no possible way the Titans offense could be this efficient yesterday. And earlier in the game, I tweeted, if there's one thing that I can guarantee in the NFL in a league of unpredictability is that the Titans defense comes to play and it shows up every week. And then they let the Chargers right back in the game.
I don't question much of what or any really of what Dean Pease does, because Dean, you know, hell, Dean's been doing this for a long time. I was fortunate enough and blessed enough to be on the sideline with them in college and in the NFL when he was with Baltimore and then playing against them. Dean, he puts together defenses. He's it seems like he's always a step ahead of what the offense is trying to do. It may not always work, but it seems like he's a step ahead. As far as, you know, putting things together and game planning. But why did he decide to put Wesley Woodyard on Eckler? I have no idea. Like, that was blatant man-to-man.
In single coverage, yeah.
In single coverage. Why would you put and listen, Wesley Woodyard is a good player, but he's not a fast player.
Not in that situation.
Exactly. And not in that situation. If he's going up against a tight end, maybe. But you're going up against Eckler, who's, I don't know how fast he is, but his legs sure enough move fast. I tell you that.
He's got some sprouls to his
exactly.
game. Here's the deal. Austin Eckler and Hunter Henry caught 13 passes for 215 yards mm-hmm. yesterday. The backup running back and the tight end, there is no chance Jayon Brown lets that happen. There's no chance that if Jayon Brown's on the field, I'm not saying those guys don't catch a few passes and don't create some offense, but there is no way that Austin Eckler and Hunter Henry have 13 catches for 215 yards in a game that Jayon Brown is playing in, because he would have been on those guys in a lot of those situations. And again, I'm not saying he makes every play.
Well, not the few at the last two drives. It basically is as if Dean Pease went in sort of these prevent defense where these guys were running wide open down the middle of the field.
Yes, I'm talking about like in the third quarter, Hunter Henry started to come to life because, again, if you're being guarded by Wesley Woodyard man-to-man, mm-hmm. that's normally Jayon Brown. And I just think Jayon Brown would be in
he's faster, quicker.
That's what he does mm-hmm. is cover tight ends and running backs. So his presence was clearly missed yesterday is I guess, my point.
615-737-1025. Let's go to Flick. Flick, you're next on Morning Drive. What's up, Flick?
Morning, guys. This might be a little far-fetched, but I couldn't help but consider yesterday. And I wanted to, do you guys think there is any possibility that Delaney being on the sideline for the game could have had anything to do with his little Twitter comment early last week about the QB controversy?
I'm not going to say it wasn't. And I'm not going to say it was. it just seemed real odd to me that, you know, you have arguably your best pass catcher on the sideline. Yes, he did, you know, what he did, tweak an ankle or something, because Jackson didn't come back either, but he probably was a little bit more hurt than you know, what we know. But Delaney's sitting on the sideline, and you can just – either he was mad because he was injured or he was mad because he couldn't get back in the game. You know what? Coaches are like that. They won't say nothing about it during the whole week, but then once they get their opportunity in the game, they will scale back your touches. They will scale back your plays in a game. That's their way of saying, hey, listen, I didn't approve of what you did, because they feel – that who they have behind you may not be as good as you, but he is good and he is fast and he is young, so we could put him in there and he can get the job done. And that's what happened when Delaney, you know, got injured, went on the sideline. Jonnu Smith just picked up right where Delaney left off, and that's kudos to Jonnu, because he was injured all last year basically, and you know, he came in, worked his way back, and we always knew he had the talent. And now he's sort of kind of putting it together, and hopefully he can stay healthy. But I don't, you know what? I don't know, Flick.
That's an interesting name.
Yeah, I don't know if that tweet, you know, upset the head coach of the gym. But I wouldn't put it. I'm not gonna say it didn't. Because I've seen too much to say. Nah, they didn't. They're bigger than that. No, they're not bigger than that. They are petty too. GMs, coaches, they are petty just like players are petty. And, you know, they'll let something like that get to them.
615-737-1025. Kenston is next on Morning Drive. Kenston, you go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, calling first time, long time. Love the show.
Thank you.
I want to come in and say, well, I think y'all are speculating a little bit on Delaney. You know, he's been on the injury report with a bum ankle for the last 2 weeks and tweaked it. So let's hold on to Delaney trade talk. I hope they don't trade him. But, you know, you never know, Derek, you might be right. I also want to talk about Tannehill. I don't know if you guys heard, but in his defense, he also said that that pass was intended for Ferguson, but he got a late release off the line, and that's why they ended up in the same area, if you believe that. But more importantly, excuse me, that goal line stand reminded me of a goal line stat we had in the season where we went to the AFC Championship game after we started 1-4. I think it was in Cleveland, and the image I remember is Keith Bullock running down the field with his hands up, and we won that game, and it turned it all around, and we ended up going 11-5. So hopefully the type of emotion can carry over from yesterday, and we can go 11-5 this year and lose one game the rest of the year. So love the show. Derek Mason, you belong in the Hall of Fame. You're the best wide receiver in Titan history.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Hopefully the Titans were listening. And hopefully the Hall of Fame voters were listening too. You know what? That goal line stance can be something that kind of shifts the momentum.
Yeah.
In a season. It can be. You know, I've seen it where plays kind of shift games and,
well, just think
and
about
game shift seasons.
How many times this season on fourth down this defense has made a stop? You go back to the Atlanta game.
They've been great, yeah.
They just continue to stop people. When their back is against the wall, they make the stop.
Well, and I think that's that was the problem with the offense before, is inconsistency. So just show up next week and do it again. And then week after that, do it again. And then the week after that, do it again. And that's the nature of the NFL. There's still so many games left to go. You're one game out of first place right now. You're 3-4. You're right there. By the way, Jonnu Smith, 53 snaps, 83% of the offensive snaps. Michael Pruitt, 32 snaps. That's half of the offensive snaps. Anthony Firkser, 15 snaps. That's 23%. Delaney Walker, the least amount of snaps of any offensive player on the field yesterday. 5 snaps. Jeffrey Simmons played 21 snaps.
I wonder how hurt was he? That's what he
did not look hurt Friday night in line for tacos. I'll tell you that. I saw him Friday night. He seemed to be in good spirits.
I'm just
didn't have any ankle braces on or anything.
It's just weird, man. It's to me, it's just, and that caller might be, yeah, you know, Fleek might be on to something, you know, because I said, hey, GMs and coaches are petty.
Stillman just sent me a text. It was the Cincinnati game, not Cleveland. You might recall it, 2002. Stillman says D-Maze basically won the game for him that day.
Oh, well, thank you.
Do you recall that or no?
No. Stillman, thank you. I'm going to go back and look at it. But Stillman, thank you, brother.
Whatever.
I don't.
When Derek walks into his man cave, this is what it looks like. He's got all the cabinets on the left side, which are all just his trophies and all of his awards.
I got the VHSs underneath.
And then on the right, you open up the cabinets underneath, and it's just stacks of tapes. And it's week one, 2004. Week two, 2003. You know, he's got every single game tape organized chronologically underneath there, so he can pop in the tape of the 0-2 Bengals game and watch how great he was.
You got VHSs
you were great that day, by the way.
Of your old games. I've got VHSs of like the 93 Royal Rumble. I might go home and watch the Royal Rumble.
Tell me you're not telling. Tell me that's not serious.
It's true. I've got old wrestling tapes somewhere. I got to dig them up.
Do you actually have a VCR?
No, no. But I guarantee in a box somewhere in an attic, I've got old wrestling tapes on VHS.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But you have nothing to watch them on.
Exactly.
You know, you can get all that stuff digitized now.
Really?
You send it off for like, it's actually fairly affordable.
Might need to do that.
You send it off, you get all your home videos, you know, put on it.
So you can watch the 93 Royal Rumble.
Yeah, Ric Flair.
Right, like my, you know, like
woo!
My in-laws are doing it so that they have all their home movies to remember because you can't really play them on anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Nick watches Ric Flair.
There you go.
I might make a home movie tonight. 615-737-1025, the number. Corey Curtis, News 2, top of the hour. We will come back and continue on with your Titans calls. Yeah, it's Monday Night Raw, man.
Okay.
737-1025. I might have to go up the top turnbuckle. Give my wife an elbow splash. Randy Savage style.
Don't
dig it.
Just don't shoot.
Back after this. Listen in today for your chance here on Morning Drive to win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC at First Tennessee Park for the first round of the USL playoffs this upcoming Saturday. Tickets now available for purchase at NashvilleSC.com. We will have a pair to give away later on today's show. Darren Dodick and Chase also with a pair coming up. Soccer playoffs are upon us. 737-1025. Corey Curtis coming up at 7 o'clock. Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24-7 in the 8 o'clock hour. We will get to tons of Vols stuff, tons of Vandy stuff. We'll mix in a little bit of the Preds as well. But obviously, Titans first and foremost. And yes, yesterday was great. You got back on track. The change to Tannehill looked like it worked. The offensive line looked respectable. many positives, but what could have been yesterday late down the stretch in that game if things didn't go the way they did?
I think we have to address, you know, the fact that you had a two-touchdown lead, or a two-score lead, I should say, with about 6 minutes to go in the game, and you almost choked it away. In fact, you probably should have choked it away. They were lucky that Austin Ekeler fell on his back and didn't fall into the end zone. At first, when that was overturned, I thought, oh, this is the worst thing that could happen. You got to let him score. Because then you have three timeouts and 40 seconds left to maybe get back into the game. And then the first Melvin Gordon play happens, and I'm going, oh, God, now you're definitely screwed, because if he's down, the clock's going to run, and they're still going to punch it in. And then the third one happens, and you get so lucky that Wesley Woodyard does something that a veteran linebacker will do, which is come in from the side and punch the ball out, and Jarrell Casey grabs it real fast, and the refs handle it in a bizarre way, but they do get it right. I mean, you were three plays, inches, away from losing the game. Probably should have lost the game. In fact, if this was the other way around, what would we be saying right now about the Titans having three plays at the goal line where they didn't get in? We'd be talking about how they failed to figure it out. And so I think, listen, Mike Vrabel's not challenging the fourth down spot. I don't mind him going for it. I don't know what you guys think. I don't mind him going for it there. Just the whole thing is, though, that you still basically tried to give the game away to the Chargers, and you had to have a spectacular goal line stand. We'd be having a really different conversation right now if Melvin Gordon makes it one more inch, or if Austin Ekeler makes it one more inch, and we're sitting here looking at a 2-5 Titans team. I don't care how good the offense looks if you lose the game. I don't care.
Well, you got
losing it, winning and losing is what matters.
You got to put that game, give the game ball to Dean Pease. Because, you know, that goal line stand, he put them in the right defense, and they held up. The defense held up. And, you know, even when they were up, I never thought, okay, this game was over. With 6 minutes left, I never thought the game was over. Because knowing Phillip Rivers.
I mean, the guy's going to be a Hall of Famer.
He's going to put his team in a position to get – they're going to get down the field. Now, whether they – score or not is a different story, but they're going to move the ball down the field. And that's exactly what he did. He moved the ball consistently down the field those last two drives that they had. And, you know, if it's not for, you know, Ekeler not getting in his butt hitting right at the inch line before the ball crosses over, or the defense getting, the two stops on the goal line, that game is over. And, yeah, the conversation is different. And then it overshadows how well Ryan Tannehill played. If they are not able to get out of Nissan Stadium with a victory, then you start, why didn't Vrabel challenge it? And I don't mind him going for it on fourth and inch, just because my thing is, if you can't get an inch, something's wrong with your offensive line. Something's going on. You should be able to get an inch. And that's basically what it was, a couple of inches. And they were not able to get it. Now, they probably could have gotten it. They just didn't replay it. It probably would have been close. But in that situation, you trust that your offensive line is going to get enough push and get the first down. And, they didn't get it. Now, whether they reviewed it and turned it over, different story, but they just didn't get it. And he felt in that situation, my thing is, you have nothing else to lose. Challenge it.
It's inconceivable.
Mm-hmm. You have nothing else to lose.
It's inconceivable to not challenge there.
Yeah.
Like, again, even, so here's the things that could happen. They could move it forward a foot. Maybe you don't get the first down, but you don't lose your timeout.
Yeah, you don't lose your timeout.
Even if they move it an inch and mm-hmm. say, oh, you know what, it's a little short. Like, he didn't go backwards, and the ball was spotted behind where they snapped it originally. Like, the spot of the ball was terrible, I thought. And then for him not to challenge, I thought was terrible. Again, who knows what the percentages are. Probably, 60-40, they move it forward a little bit. But even still, you might lose a timeout. Okay, so you've lost a timeout. Now you're up by four. Or whatever it is, up by three with two timeouts left. Like, you have the lead and a 2 minute warning. You don't need another challenge, because once you hit 2 minutes, you don't need to challenge anything. This is essentially the last 30 seconds that you would need to challenge anything. And now you're in a really serious situation and you don't give it a shot. I don't know. It has felt like the calls have been obvious as to what he should do in those situations. And he has gone the other direction four games in a row now.
I almost wonder if he's got somebody upstairs in the booth that's in his headset and is feeding him bad information. Like, he's dependent for another set of eyes above from a different vantage point, and he's trusting that guy more than his own obvious instinct.
Well, and what it could be is that person could also fall on the conservative end of the challenge spectrum where he says, you know, listen, it doesn't look like they're going to overturn this, so why waste the challenge? I understand that, but not with 38 seconds to go before the two-minute warning. Like,
right.
What else do you have to lose? Okay, you lost your final challenge. Okay. All right. I mean, there's a chance a big play could happen in that 30-second window that you need a challenge, and maybe you need to overturn something. But, you know, odds are this is still going to be the biggest possible play that you need to challenge. And so the previous couple of plays early in the season where there were pass interference calls, we have clearly learned, the NFL is clearly telling us they're not going to overturn pass interference calls, right? Like, unless it is so egregious, there's no chance they're going to overturn pass interference, offensive or defensive. And so it's probably the right decision to not challenge those. And we might have given Vrabel a hard time for not challenging a couple of those at the beginning of the year. That was probably the right move to not challenge those, because I'm not sure I've seen one over. Have you guys seen one yet in the NFL that's been overturned?
Nope.
A major call?
Nope.
So, you know, those are different. This is a spot of the football. This is the game. If you get the call right and the ref just happens to see what you saw and what everyone else in America saw, you know, the game's over. You've got the football with whatever it is, 4 minutes to go, and all you got to do is run some clock.
13 points against the Browns, 19 points against the Colts, 20 against the Jags, 10 against the Falcons, 14 against the Bills, 16 against the Broncos, 20 against the Chargers. We are almost halfway through the season. This defense has yet to yield more than 20 points in a game through seven games. That is pretty remarkable.
Pretty good.
Well, they're a good defense. They were a good scoring defense, meaning defense against the points against last year, and it's held up this year. And they might be even, at least across the defensive line now that Simmons is back, they might be even better now.
What's so funny is that yesterday, even as I'm watching, and the obvious difference between Tannehill and Mariota, but I'm still looking at a game that felt so much like a Titans game. So I'm hearing your voice in my head, Nick, as I'm watching a 10-10 game. Like at the end of the third quarter with very little offense on either side.
Well, there was a stretch where the Chargers' total plays to the Titans was 37 for L.A., 13 for the Titans. Tannehill looked good, but he couldn't get back on the field.
They were long drives. Like, both teams were just having these long drives that, like, again, it was 10-10, I think, going into the fourth quarter, right? Almost all the scoring happened in the fourth quarter. And I'm sitting there going, I'm hearing Nick's head tell me about how awful the product is, just in general, from like an entertainment standpoint. And I'm going, okay, they changed quarterbacks, it looks better, and it's still 10-10 going into the fourth quarter. Like, it's still
before,
a defensive battle.
Before the Chargers went down and scored in the fourth quarter, I think they had the ball like 6 minutes in the second half, and the Titans had like 30.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 28-6, something like that.
Second half was a roller reversal.
It was just like they could, the Titans control the clock.
There's only 30 minutes and a half, just to let you know.
They could at that point. No, at that point it was 6 minutes to 20 something minutes, or no, it was six plays.
I think the Chargers ran three plays in the third quarter.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah. Six plays to like 20 something, 30 something plays. And it was just like you said, it was a reversal on what was done in the first half.
The third quarter just felt so much like all the other other quarters for Titans football, right? Like, a turnover for Tannehill, a couple of sacks, no points for the Chargers, great defense by the Titans, no offense by the Titans. I'm watching the third quarter going, oh, this is going to make Nick happy. And then an offensive explosion on both sides of the ball for both teams in the fourth quarter. All the points were scored in the fourth quarter, which makes for entertaining football. So if you're one of the 11 people that was there yesterday, you saw a great fourth quarter.
Friends and family only, 615-737.
Invitation
only. 1025. We will kick off hour number two with our pal Corey Curtis from News 2, talking all things Titans. And then for the duration of the 7 o'clock hour, we got to get to what happened in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night, and also what happened on the West End Saturday afternoon. We're back after this on Morning Drive.